Hello, this is Fuggo King here, and welcome again to the Highland Good Food Partnership podcast. This time I'm speaking with a couple of people about their involvement with long-standing businesses that have similar focuses. Both of these people are very passionate and involved in what they're doing. We're getting some personal stories and some hopes and dreams for the future. Firstly, I'm speaking with Donnie McLeod of McLeod Organics, based in Ardersia. Then the second interview is with Rosie Jack, who is the business development manager at Balcaski Estate in Fife. Glorious sunny day here, and I've come all the way through to Ardersia. I'm here today to meet with Donnie McLeod, who has had a business here for 25 years. And there's been a lot of changes over those years, I think. But thanks, Donnie, for agreeing for me to come and meet you here and have a chat.
Well, thank you very much for coming. Yes, we've been here for 25 years. And we've probably been at the forefront of everything organic throughout the whole of Scotland for that period of time. We've gone through many changes and many evolutions to stay there. But our number one priority at the very beginning was to have a sustainable business. And also, one of the aims that we had at the very beginning was to promote organic production and organic consumption within the whole of Scotland. That we have continued to do. I've been a big organic buff since the very beginning. I totally believe that organic should be mainstream and that organic farming should be the norm, mainly for four reasons. The first reason being the health of the environment. Organic certification ensures that happens so that organic farming will protect wildlife and it has an environmental aspect to it. The biggest at the moment is climate change. Climate change affects everyone right throughout the world. And if agriculture went completely organic, then you could reverse much of the damage being caused to the climate by farming, especially with nitrous oxide and things like that. And the third aspect, of course, is human health. We have the things like ultra-processed food now being recognised as being really damaging to human health. We've been saying that for 25 years, and people are moving back and understanding the problems that's being created with human health. The fourth reason why organic is important is because if you want a future that has benefits to human health and to the environment and to everything, then food should be produced and consumed organically.
Yeah, because it's central. It's absolutely central to everything, not just humans, but as you say, to the nature and everything around. We're all interlinked and reliant on each other. So I know that, you know, there've obviously been changes over the years. So I'm interested to hear a little bit about where things started. And obviously that sustainability and organic was always, that was the starting point. And having access to the land as well. Was it your family's farm here or how did that come about?
Yes, it was a family farm. Well, originally, we came from the West Coast, from a crofting background. In a small village in Glenelg, in the West Coast. And the community was pretty self-sustaining at that time. And as children, we recognised that we were part of the whole system and that if we damaged things around us, we would actually be damaging ourselves and damaging our own families and communities. A lot of that has now been lost, mainly through the result of globalization and the dreaded supermarkets. So 25 years ago, I was working in the financial services industry. At the same time, I was a Greenpeace activist.
Interesting combination
jumping
there.
Jumping off oil rigs and jumping off all sorts of doing a lot of environmental work. And it was my father here on the farm, took ill, and he was going to retire. So I thought, well, I'll come back to the farm and show that things can be done differently. And I converted the farm to organics. and at the same time set up a box scheme, which was the first of its kind up here. Box schemes were not very well known then. Mm. We got the first 30 customers by setting up a farmer's market in Inverness, mm-hmm. where we were the first stallholder, one stallholder in Inverness, and said, this is Inverness Farmer's Market, which is still going on 25 years
yes,
later.
Yes, yeah.
We developed from there up to about 300 boxes around the Highlands. We worked with a community-supported agriculture yeah. in Forres, and it stopped after a few years.
Mm, so you were forced to kind of rethink,
so
yeah.
we kept getting demands from people across in Murrayshire to actually say, come and deliver over here. And we refused, first of all, and then eventually pressure was put on that we would expand into Murrayshire.
Yeah.
So we expanded across to Murray, and at the same time, we also developed a lot of connections with box schemes who had set up down in the Central Belt, such as East Coast Organics and Grow Wild, and the biggest one, a company called Dam Head, and they went bankrupt way back. Some of their customers wanted us to take over the Dam Head operation, and so we opened a shop in just south of Edinburgh, which wasn't very successful because managing it out long distance didn't
yeah,
work.
Yeah.
But we had all the customers down there who were desperate for us to actually keep going and supplying them. So we decided we would do it all from up here.
Yeah.
So we developed that then, and we ended up with all these customers in the Central Belt.
Yeah.
Originally, we had a shop and a cafe and bed and breakfast units. But through time, we gave up on the bed and breakfast and started taking volunteers, woofers instead.
Yeah.
So the woofers used to come here. It was the best woofing accommodation in Britain because we all had ensuite rooms and everything.
Yeah, none of this caravans and tents in the garden.
So when we went online then, probably 10 years ago, and that expanded things dramatically because then we had to start using carriers for areas that we didn't deliver to. Mm-hmm. So we gave full coverage for Scotland.
Yeah, amazing.
At that time, and we have done ever since. But now that I'm 76 years old,
hooray!
And looking at doing less than what I did before.
Yeah.
The succession plan was that my son would be taking over.
Mm.
But I lost my son, Stevie, a few years ago. He had a brain tumour. He passed away at Highland Hospice. And then I thought, well, what will we do with the business?
Yeah.
We had many people wanting to buy it, but the problem with selling it would be that it would then have to have a profit motive for anybody who bought it.
Mm.
And if you have a profit motive in there, the business will be focused then on making money rather than serving the needs of the people within it.
Yeah, it's very much what I've gathered, that your focus has always been about sustainability and community.
Yeah, so I thought then, what do I do? Let's make an employee co-op. Let's hand the business over to the employees.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem then was that the employees didn't want to take on the responsibility.
They know what it's like.
So they know what it's like to run a business.
Yeah.
And they didn't want to be working 24/7 like what I was.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, right, what's the next step in there? So I spoke to some customers and they said, whatever you do, don't pack in because we are dependent on getting our organic produce through McLeod Organics. And also we have producers who have been producing for McLeod Organics, and they said, or whatever you do, don't allow the business to fold because we're dependent on it.
Of course, all
and
connected
again. Of course,
again.
You think the staff are also dependent on it.
Mm.
So I looked at different options and I came up with what's called a multi-stakeholder co-op by actually tying all three of these groups together so that you have a multi-stakeholder co-op. There isn't one in Scotland at the moment. There is plenty of consumer co-ops, other cooperatives who are employee owned. So you have workers cooperatives and you have producer cooperatives, which are groups of producers that get together. But actually the ideal situation on for sustainability is to tie all three groups together so that you have the customers who are dependent on the business, you have the employees that are dependent on the business for their jobs, and you have the producers who are dependent on the business for their products.
You know, as someone who buys my veg from you, obviously I've been following through the newsletters and information that's getting sent out. And one of the things I like is that through this process, you are very much keeping in touch with all the different peoples involved, as you're saying, the producers, the customers. Yeah.
We have set up a steering group. First of all, we've split the steering group into four subgroups, one looking at the constitution and one looking at the staffing. Mm-hmm. And one looking at the finance side, and the fourth one looking at marketing. So all different these groups have been working steadily over the last few months. The constitution is finished.
Great.
And it's a 36-page constitution. That was a nightmare.
Oh.
The principle of a cooperative is that it's one member, one vote. Mm-hmm. And if you have, say, 600 customer members, and you have 10 staff members, and maybe 10 supplier members, how do you stop the customers from having the complete say over it? Mm-hmm. So we've built in a weighting system whereby each group of the three groups will have 26% of the vote.
Okay.
And in order to change anything in the constitution, it only requires 75%. So as long as each group has got a minimum of 26%, they can't be overridden by the other two groups.
Mm, yeah.
And at the same time, you mustn't write into the constitution things that will disrupt the running of the business, because the business has to run every day.
Of course.
So you only have to have in the constitution the things which are fundamental to the business running the way it is. Like, it has to have full certification. It's got to be an organic business, and none of them can actually say, well, we don't need to be organic or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it must be organic, and it must be fully certified by the Soil Association.
Yeah.
But the constitution is now finished.
Good.
So the aims are very much in parallel with what McLeod Organics Limited initially was.
Well, it's passing on, isn't it? Well, everything that you and your family have learnt.
There has to be an education element in there for the public. Yes. There has to be, the main business is to promote the production and consumption of organic foods throughout the whole of Scotland.
Yeah, no, that's obviously really key. How have you personally found this process?
A year ago, I thought, now this is the answer, and I will just be able to carry on being a supplier to the cooperative and be in the polytunnels. But the makeup of the steering group and the board, they want me to stay on it for a certain length of time, you know, which I've agreed to.
And, okay.
And we're almost there, but it has taken a lot of work.
Yes, of course.
But I will be delighted when I'm able to just be the supplier to the cooperative with my polytunnels.
Yes.
So the main aims of the cooperative is, number one, was that it would be sustainable.
Yeah.
And not be for profit investments.
Yeah.
That's pretty fundamental, and it's fundamental with all cooperatives. The cooperative is run for the benefits of the members, who are the three groups, not for the benefit of shareholders or owner of it. The aim is to increase the organic production and consumption right across Scotland, and the education of the public into the future of food, and also there's a strong environmental protection going to be built into the constitution.
Yeah. I appreciate that what you've done or are doing is to leave a legacy, you know, and to make sure that that can continue as well. It's not just for the generations now or the next ones or the next ones. It's to keep going. I mean, it's really interesting hearing some of the stories. I'm sure there's a lot more that we could talk about.
Yeah, well, one of the deciding points on the cooperative was a woman who was in Neudert. She's moved to Mali now, but she has been buying produce from us for over 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
And she wrote me a letter saying, whatever you do, do not give up the business. And that was quite a heartfelt letter. One of the arguments that we had within the industry is that there's many people who have set up box schemes or whatever with their own produce and only for part of the year. And I've always argued the point that people that do that are not looking after their customers, because they're saying to their customers, I want you to buy produce from me when I've got it. And when I don't have it, I don't care about you.
Right, that's how it feels.
To a customer is maybe getting supplied for 6 months of the year.
And then they're back at the supermarket because they don't have a choice. And then saying
to them, just go to the supermarket.
Yeah.
You know, or go somewhere else. I'm not interested in you, what you're eating for the rest of the year. So we always worked from the very beginning and said we will supply 52 weeks, well, 51 weeks of the year, because we usually get them up between Christmas and New Year. We always worked with a principle of a hierarchy of food, which was if it was produced organically in the Highlands, that's what people actually got in their boxes first.
Yeah.
If it wasn't available in the Highlands organically, then we would go to the rest of Scotland. If it wasn't available in the rest of Scotland, we would go to the UK.
Yeah.
And if it wasn't available in the UK, we would get it from the European Union.
Yeah.
If it wasn't in the European Union, we could get it from the rest of the world. And encouraging people to eat within the seasons.
Yes.
But I think the concept of people eating within the seasons has gone. And that's because the supermarkets will make these things available all the year round. So we thought, right, because of the supermarkets are, to me, an evil in society, but the concept of people wanting to eat lemons all the year round, something like that, why don't we supply lemons from a trusted source that is organically certified in Europe? And we built connections with Spanish cooperatives and organic growers in Europe. And therefore, we could supply fruit boxes all the year round. Because organic is a legal term across the whole world, then we can supply food from other places. So over the years, we've built up a massive connection so that we can source almost anything food-wise, fully organically certified for the customers. And we have customers that are doing all their shopping with us and don't need to go near a supermarket.
That's fantastic.
And especially the ones where nowadays people are getting more interested in plastic. You go to the supermarket, everything is wrapped in plastic. And it has to be if it's organic. So people are wanting stuff without all the wrappings and the plastic on it. I mean, it seems crazy to me to wrap potatoes. Bananas that have their own skin.
They have their own skin,
And oranges have got their own skin. They're already wrapped in by nature. So why put plastic over them, which then goes and contaminates the rest of the world? So that's why we have nearly 1,000 products on our website now.
Well, if it's all right with you, Donny, I would like to say a big thank you and really appreciate you sharing some of this and getting an insight into how it's been working. So very many thanks.
Yeah. No problem, and we will sort the world out.
It's great to hear these personal stories and how the enthusiasm and continued passion for something that is felt to be important. And I think you'll find with the next interview that that's continued. There's a lot to be said for finding different ways to keep a business going. So we do have to be creative, and there are so many imaginative things that are going on that I'm barely covering in this podcast. So my next chat, I hope you enjoy learning all about another way of creating an amazing business. So it's a spring day here up in the north of Scotland, but I'm speaking to Rosie Jack in Fife today. She's on Balcaski Estate and she's their business development manager, a very grand sounding title. I'm sure it covers a lot of different things. Thanks, Rosie, for agreeing to have a chat. So maybe to start with, just give a brief outline of what does that involve for you within the estate?
Yes, it's not very sunny here in Fife either, to be honest, in the East Nook. It's pretty grey, but still lots happening out on the farm and around the estate. So we're lucky to still be busy at this time of year. Yes, so my role as business development manager has kind of, I guess, grown around me as I've been part of the estate for quite a few years now, starting off at Bow House, which is our food hub on the estate, where we have seasonal farmers markets and many different food and drink production businesses that are based on site. but there was a real need for other business units around the estate for a complete vast collection of different people, skills and needs and wants. So we offer everything from small workshops for guitar makers to stained glass window makers, all the way down to a flour mill at Bowhouse, butchery, cafe, bakery. So the estate is very broad within its skill set, and that's something we're really keen to encourage, is people coming back to a rural environment and feeling that they can set up a business within a rural setting. So food plays a huge part to that in ensuring that food and drink businesses can have a successful business in a rural setting. So that's me and what I get up to. Lots of herding cats sometimes, trying to keep people happy and also inspiring people to see what's possible for them. And they've got the skills and we have the resources and space that we want to share.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's how I came across the estate, was by visiting Fife on a holiday and coming to one of the markets and going, yeah, oh my goodness, there's a lot of opportunity here. It obviously draws a lot of people in the market. And then, as you say, there's a lot more going on outside of that. I kind of wanted to then to come on a tour of the estate, but I didn't have time. But it's something I know that is available. And I will put a link for the estate website, which covers so many interesting aspects. From my own perspective, that thought of being able to tap in to the community and support each other business-wise seems to bring a lot of life and inspiration together. How is that going? Is that working out for people, do you feel?
Yeah, I actually think something we're really keen to encourage is a job sharing. So where businesses might not be able to employ somebody on the land full time, because there's a community of businesses actually in quite a small proximity of each other, especially down at Bowhouse, the community are obviously looking for jobs, maybe want to be growing food. And Connie and Tom at the East Nook Market Garden are a perfect example of that. They've got obviously got a market garden, which is about 4 acres now. But Connie also still has a job within the flour mill up at Bowhouse. So when the business first began, she actually spent quite a lot of her time setting up the mill, setting up and sharing her job and her time with the plot that her and her husband set up. And as well as that, we've got other people that job share within Bowhouse as well. So Liz, the estate caretaker, she also works in the flour mill. So I think the community getting involved with growing food and Bowhouse as a hub has worked well, because we've tried to not just concentrate on this has to be a full-time job, you have to be here X, Y, and Z, making it as flexible as possible. And because it is quite seasonal, the work that we do when they are producing food, it's quite important that the business and producing works for the people that are working on the land. So community-wise, that's how I see it working quite nicely together. Obviously, where possible, we're trying to get our local villages and different networks from, I mean, all of the different businesses at Bowhouse have their own individual networks within their fields. So we have Futtle, which is an organic brewing and distilling unit. They have a huge network of brewers, distillery owners, all organic that they can tap into. And those people obviously come to Bowhouse and then feed their skills into the network as well. So I think, you know, as well as that Scotland the Bread, they have a huge network of bakers and flour mills and growers that again come to Bowhouse and share skills and meet other people within other networks. Bowhouse is quite a web of activity, because different community groups, different organisations kind of intertwine with each other, and there's lots of connections that people didn't realise were already existing that then they go, oh, hang on, I know that person as well because of this. So as a structure, it's a physical site, but it gives that opportunity for connections through vast different networks and food systems. So it's worked really well in that sense. We'd love for other Bowhouse models to pop up all over the UK. That'd be a big success story for us.
Yeah, that's absolutely the kind of thing I'm interested in seeing, or finding other people who are doing models that may have some similarity or have found aspects that really work. I mean, as a visitor just to the Bowhouse area, it felt really vibrant. Yeah. I also noticed that there were people of all ages there. And that would seem to be the case across the whole estate, perhaps, that families are involved in the farming. And yeah, there's a lot of potential and a lot being realised too.
Definitely.
Yeah, well, it'd be interesting to know, are there any new projects coming up? Anything particularly exciting that you'd like to share?
There is some really exciting things happening. Some of them are TBC at this stage, so stay tuned. Bow House is really bursting at the seams now. We're very fortunate that we have new businesses joining the fold. An amazing catering and events company called Stocks Events are relocating to us. They'll be fulfilling catering orders, but as well as that, setting up a sort of cook school auditorium with ready meals as retail as well. So very much watch this space. It's very exciting for them moving in to Bow House, and it will definitely elevate the offering there. But just to go back to our demographic, I guess you could say, yes, I'm so glad you noticed that we have such an array of people that come to Bow House, and we do. There's pros and cons to this, because it's amazing that everybody feels they can come, because there's something for everyone, especially at the market weekends, but out with those, you know, all the businesses that are based at Bow House are open weekly. So there is something for people to come in and learn about and to buy from as well. This makes it really tricky for us to market ourselves. We don't really need to market ourselves anymore, because the market weekends are actually incredibly busy, which is a good problem to have. But back in the days when we were trying to, you know, promote ourselves and talk to the right people, it was quite tough because our demographic was so broad. But across the greater estate, the team is pretty young, which is really exciting. I'm actually one of the oldies. So,
you're definitely not.
Yeah, we have 3 Harper Adams students that are with us just now, and we'll have new ones next year as well. So they bring a great injection of new ideas and kind of young attitude to the mix. But across the other team members, they are young, and they've got a really unique point of view on how we look to farm on the estate, because we are doing things that there's no blueprint for in this part of Scotland, especially regenerative practices. So for us, I think that's really exciting. You know, you're always going to get other farmers looking over the fence going, what the heck are they growing? That's bonkers. But that's fine. You know, we'll give it a go. We'll see what works, what doesn't work. And hopefully it does work. But making sure that we are being as inclusive as possible, and when people are relocating from cities out to a rural setting, that we are introducing them to this hopefully young network, or that there is somewhere that they feel belonging. I think that's really important to consider when we're speaking to any business, not just food and drink ones. So it's something that I'm always really cautious of, and that we think about across the estate as well.
I had a look at the website, and, you know, I'd spotted the organic side of farming and agroecological farming, but also links with local school groups, links with local community, very much in non-profit ways, as well as obviously running business. Yeah. So I spotted that the estate, or some of the members of the estate, had been part of founding Food from Fife, for example. So there's a lot going on, but there's a lot of good people working within that, it seems. Are there any of those particular threads you would like to pick up on?
The organic farming, the whole estate was fully converted a couple of years ago. So it's something that we are quite passionate about. It has its pros and cons, but it's something that we want to make sure that we are leaving a good legacy on the land, that it is better, if not improved, I guess, from where we found it. In terms of other groups that we're involved with, we do try and work with lots of different groups where possible. So we've just had 190 school children from local primary schools a couple of weeks ago down at Bow House for a RET Day, the Royal Highland Education Trust. So we did a food and farming day at Bow House. There was a workshop in the flour mill, a workshop in the butchery, beekeeping, marketing. There was the cattle, the sheep, the pigs down there. So the kids could really see things, you know, and industries that they might be interested to go into. you know, we are lucky that we've got a young team, but we need to keep encouraging young people to move into food and farming industries. There is a shortage across the UK, which we all know about. There's a shortage in many industries. But if we can inspire a couple of kids to think about butchery or think about farming, then that's brilliant. I'm really interested in anything muddy, noisy, smelly, get the kids in about it and they'll remember it. I mean, when I was at school, I was rubbish at reading and writing. But when I was out helping, doing something, learning a skill, I remembered that. So that's how I hope that other children might learn as well. Food from Fife, that was a great mention. Yes, we were quite involved. Toby was very involved in the setup of Food from Fife back in the day. And Bowhouse, I guess, is something that's quite pinnacle to that. A lot of the businesses based at Bowhouse are members of Food from Fife. I'm on the current committee of that. And for us, it's about celebrating the breadbasket of produce that comes from Fife. We're so lucky. You know, other parts of Scotland don't have such great growing land that we do. And we also are surrounded on three sides by coast. So we have the waters, the coast for foraging, and then this amazing land as well that can grow soft fruits, amazing cereals, great grass for beef and sheep as well and pork. So I'm really keen to make sure that businesses, whatever size, are represented through Food from Fife across Scotland and the UK. And yes, it's sometimes business-to-business orientated, but I think we're also quite keen to showcase it to consumers as well as a tag that businesses, if they're members of Food from Fife, can say they're proud to say they're Food from Fife members. So yeah, it's definitely something we're always keen to support.
That all sounds pretty exciting. And I'm kind of gathering as we go along that I know the estate and the family have been there centuries. But in terms of the sort of current business models that you're talking about, also there's a good history there. There's clearly been a connection all the way through, that there have been intentions from years back that perhaps have been realised,
yeah,
and some that are still coming through, that are still growing.
Absolutely. I mean, the job's never done, I would say. And I think we're very lucky that, yeah, the owner has a clear vision for what this area of land should look like and how it should feed back to the people that live here. And I think I'm really inspired by that. And I'm so glad that I'm part of a team that is really outward looking and not just sort of, we're here, we'll do what we want and get on with it. Everything we do, we consider people that aren't even aware of us on the estate or in the community. So I think we're really cautious to make sure that any decision we do make is for the benefit of as many people as possible. You know, sometimes we don't get that right, and it's tough to make sure that decisions that we're making are the best ones for us, but for the communities as well. So yeah, there has been a long-term vision for the estate, and we're keen to kind of keep moving that forward. I mean, it's ever-changing rapidly. So probably a tricky part of my job is trying to jump between roads, I guess, and make sure we're on track for the bigger goals. But yeah, I think the history's there, you're right. The family have been here for a long time. But for us, it's very forward-thinking. We don't really harp on the history of the estate, if you like. I think lots of estates in Scotland do, and that's brilliant. They talk about the history of where they're from and what they did. But for us, it's more, what can we do in the future? What's the plans? Where can we use our energy best?
Yeah, as someone who moved to Scotland to gain access to a small piece of land, you know, my knowledge of perhaps the more traditional estates just makes me a bit grumpy and sort of, yeah. Oh, you've got all that. Why are you not sharing it more? So to find places that really are very aware of caretaking for the future generations,
yes,
and sharing what there is in so many different ways gives me good heart to feel, you know, I'm interested in this being a successful business model. So it is working. It is possible.
So like you say, we're very fortunate to be stewards of this land, and we're keen to share it where others might not. And there's lots of good reasons why in Scotland it's hard to obtain land, for lots of reasons, legal reasons and just historic reasons. So Pitch Up is something that we have joined forces with an estate down south called Kingsclear. They created this idea, this concept, and basically it is a call to action for anybody who has a business idea around food, farming, agriculture, but with a sense of a circular economy. So that business is adding value back into the land, the soils, the biodiversity, but also maybe working with other businesses that already coexist within the area. So how do they fit in within a circular movement of product? They might use waste from someone else. They might use someone's raw materials. For example, over in Kingsclere, they have the Rolling Egg Company, which is a mobile egg unit, which moves along behind the mobile dairy unit. Brilliant. That organic matter is going back into the ground and they're getting a product from it. Amazing. We have a few things like that up here on the estates. We obviously have a few businesses that are based here, which are brilliant, but we really didn't have a way of talking about it or trying to open it up to other businesses and basically market it to businesses that we are very much open to people approaching us for resources and land and space. So it was a big success. We were really pleased. It's run through just now. We're speaking to the final candidates and we're at the stage of agreeing to a few different businesses joining forces with us. So do keep a lookout for anything pitch up orientated. We are looking to have other estates and landowners join us. We're the pitch up Fife, Kingsclere's pitch up Hampshire. We might have a pitch up Perthshire. We might have a pitch up Inverness. So we're looking for other farmers and organisations to adopt the concept of pitch up.
Mm-hmm. It feels like a good time to do any of these things because with the changes that have happened in recent years in terms of what governance there is within Scotland and the UK generally,
then
get in there, grab different ways of doing things. That sounds really interesting. I guess, circular economy is something that you mentioned, and that's perhaps a phrase that people hear and then they think, well, what does that mean? Would you be willing to elucidate a little bit?
I guess so. I mean, there's lots of buzzwords. So there's enterprise stacking, there's circular economy. So they're kind of two buzzwords which we dance around now and again. So I would say enterprise stacking is businesses that are at different points of the supply chain and help each other. Circular economy for me is more about a business that adds value to a business in front of them or the land behind them. So for us as landowners, that's probably more fitting that a circular movement of product or raw material or something coming back to benefit what was there before, that makes sense to us and what we want to encourage. I kind of see it as something, so sometimes it's quite hard to describe as sort of a physical thing. For example, I guess down at Bowhouse, so we have the cattle that mob graze the land, they're organic and pasture for life assured. That meat goes through into the butchery. That meat is then bought from the cafe bakery. And then the produce that is created in the butchery is then sold and bought by the customers that come to Bowhouse. Those people can then see those cattle out in the field. I guess that's one kind of airy-fairy way of looking at it. But for us, it's about it tells the story of where food comes from and also hopefully gives back to the land, but is fair to each part of the chain.
I'm sure there are many, many examples. I guess one last little thing that I noticed on the website, I really like maps. And I found the very colourful map of the estate with lots of interesting things written next to it. Yeah, I would recommend people go and have a look at the website if they can't come to visit themselves.
Yeah, well, obviously, please do come and visit. Bowhouse is our kind of customer-facing side of things. But yeah, the estate, that map you're mentioning, is the different colours are the different tenant farmers that we have. Can't really remember which colour is which off the top of my head, but you can kind of see how they're broken up into chunks. And the larger colour, we farm in hand. I think there's some stat from a couple of years ago, about 15 years ago, there was only something like 6 to 8 people employed and living on the estate. And now we're over 100 people living and working, getting something from being here. So for us, that's such an achievement. Don't quote me on those numbers, but it's something. Yeah, do have a look at our website. Do look at the different workshops and events we have happening. If you do want to come for an estate tour, we have really exciting events called Grass to Grill, which are throughout the year, where you get to come down to Bowhouse. We take you for a drive around in the tractor trailer, seeing the land and what's happening at that time of year, livestock-wise, produce-wise as well. And then you come back to Bowhouse and have an amazing meal. So If you want to come out and see what we're about, we'd really welcome it.
Great. Well, I'm very tempted to come back. I shall have another holiday in Fife. That feels like a really nice place to round up and say thanks again, Rosie. Really good talking to you.
Thank you. Really nice to chat.
There are going to be some links with the podcast that you can follow to find out more about what you've been listening to. And also, whether it's this time around or soon, we'll be sharing some more about the Pitch Up idea and also other cooperatives that you can get involved in. Thanks again to everyone who's talked with me. Thanks very much to Highland Good Food for supporting and giving me this job, which I really enjoy. Also, of course, thanks to Rachel Butterworth for her excellent editing. And also thanks to Rachel and Emma Butterworth for the beautiful music.